The Central Nervous System Sensory Disorders, Dr. Claw on Fibromyalgia, ME/CFS, and Long COVID, by Court Johnson, August 31st, 2024. Court's note. Please note that I have added parts to this blog that were not covered in our talk. It was great to get an opportunity to talk to Daniel Claw, MD, who, with his hundreds of publications, was a key figure in helping drag the fibromyalgia field into the modern age. In one of his talks, he recalled votes being taken at conferences as to whether fibromyalgia, FM, was a real disease. Those votes are no longer being taken. For all his work in fibromyalgia, though, Claw has never been simply a fibro guy. His interests extend far beyond one disease. Claw's first paper back in 1995, The Pathogenesis of Chronic Pain and Fatigue Syndromes with Special Reference to Fibromyalgia, was on chronic pain and fatigue syndromes and included diseases like ME/CFS, irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, and migraine. One can only conjecture how much further along these diseases would be if these fields had followed Claw's lead and studied them together. In that paper from almost 30 years ago, Claw proposed that central nervous system hyperactivity affecting different parts of the brain was likely responsible for the different diseases. Over time, Claw's focus has extended to many chronic pain conditions. The Chronic Pain and Fatigue Research Center, or CPFRC, he established at the University of Michigan in 1998, has launched studies on fibromyalgia, interstitial cystitis, osteoarthritis, low back pain, and Gulf War illness, and Claw has published on chronic pain in such diverse diseases as multiple sclerosis, cirrhosis, endometriosis, and chronic pelvic pain, rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, myofascial pain, TMJ, low back pain, environmental sensitivities, and others. A new type of pain, nociplastic pain. Over the past 5 years or so, Dr. Claw has been focused on a new concept of pain called nociplastic pain that's of particular relevance to diseases like fibromyalgia, ME/CFS, irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, migraine, etc. Echoing Claw's thoughts of 30 years ago, nociplastic pain is believed to originate in the central nervous system and particularly affects sensory processing. Diseases like fibromyalgia, ME/CFS, chronic pelvic pain syndrome, etc. paved the way for the rapid adoption of the nociplastic pain concept. Claw noted to his surprise that he was recently asked to pen a review for a group that's historically been hostile to fibromyalgia and ME/CFS, neurologists. For the Nature Reviews and Neurology Journal, that's progress. The really intriguing thing about nociplastic pain, a condition that produces widespread pain, fatigue, sleep, cognitive, and mood problems, sound familiar? Is how widespread it is. It affects people with fibromyalgia, ME/CFS, and long COVID, but also a significant percentage of people with such disparate diseases as rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, psoriatic arthritis, lupus, low back pain, multiple sclerosis, post-cancer, and sickle cell anemia. So many diseases have nociplastic subsets that I was curious how many diseases Dr. Claw thought it was present in. Claw said that whether nociplastic pain was triggered by injury, inflammation, autoimmunity, or whatever, some degree of nociplastic pain is going to show up in a subset of people in every chronic pain condition. That's good news for poorly funded nociplastic conditions like fibromyalgia and ME/CFS. Nociplastic pain exists on a continuum. Some people have more of it, some people have less of it. Just as he did decades ago, Claw believes nociplastic pain is caused by a central nervous system amplifier that is ratcheting up signals coming from the periphery or body. It can start in one of two ways. From the top down, that is, from the central nervous system down, as occurs in fibromyalgia, and some people with ME/CFS, or from the bottom up, as in rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, lupus, etc., where an injury in the periphery comes first and nociplastic pain over time develops. The longer you have a pain condition, the more susceptible you are to your nervous system going bananas and producing this symptom melange of widespread pain, fatigue, sleep, cognitive, and mood problems. Pain vulnerable networks? Exactly why this is happening is not clear, but Claw referred to some recent studies from his lab in children that are helping to determine how it's happening. The 2022 Neurobiological Antecedents of Multisite Pain in Children study, which followed children for 9 years, found that increased activity in some brain regions, sensorimotor regions, and circuits, insula, sensorimotor, and the default mode network, occurred prior to and predicted which children came down with nociplastic pain later. This finding fits well with the idea that pain-vulnerable networks are present in people who come down with these diseases. The insula, for instance, regulates autonomic nervous system functioning and plays a key role in pain perception, sensory signal integration, cognition, and emotion. The default mode network promotes rumination, and the parabrachial nucleus, a recent finding, regulates the autonomic nervous system, processes sensory information, and triggers alarms. The authors proposed that the increased insula default mode network functional connectivity found primes the brains of children or adults to be more sensitive to sensory inputs. Add in increased rumination or alarm to a brain being overwhelmed by sensory stimuli coming from the body to a hyperactive stress response system, and you have a pretty nasty picture. Why this is happening is not clear. While early life stress can predispose these areas of the brain to become hyperactive, studies indicate that this affects only a small percentage of people with nociplastic pain. A follow-up study found that when this blob of symptoms, as Dr. Claw put it, started showing up, sleep problems come first, then fatigue, cognitive issues, widespread pain, and finally, mood issues. That's reminiscent of studies showing that poor sleep rapidly increases pain sensitivities. Claw said the two things he most wanted to be able to get his patients to do was to get better sleep and find ways to exercise. The appearance of mood problems was never predictive of the development of pain, fatigue, sleep, etc. problems. It was always the other way around. Sensory disorders. 30 years of research appears to have only strengthened Claw's original idea that fibromyalgia, ME/CFS, IBS, endometriosis, interstitial cystitis, migraine, and Gulf War illness are all, at least in part, central nervous system-driven disorders. Claw believes the same process that's producing pain is also causing the sensitivity to bright lights, noises, and odors, and even the hypersensitivity many people experience with drugs, foods, etc. That made me think of all the weird and almost indescribable sensations associated with these diseases. The standard descriptions, stabbing, throbbing, aching, pinching, stinging, burning, often don't apply. Many of my unpleasant sensations are so strange that I can hardly describe them. They feel like a nervous system run amok. And you can see a link in the text version for an article called, In Their Own Words, Fibromyalgia and ME/CFS Patients Describe Their Symptoms. Twists and turns on the research front. Then Dr. Claw talked about the twists and turns of research funding, an apt subject for poorly funded diseases like ME/CFS and fibromyalgia. Claw had been pushing for fibromyalgia to be recognized as a real disease, but needed proof, and funding was scarce. He got Department of Defense funding to assess brain functioning in Gulf War illness and was able to include fibromyalgia patients as a control group. By the time the study was done, interest in Gulf War illness had evaporated, but the study found that a pain stimulus activated 13 regions of the brain in fibromyalgia patients, but only one region in the healthy controls. The study's clear biological evidence of central nervous system dysfunction helped pave the way for the recognition of fibromyalgia as a real disease. In 2020, Claw showed that neuroinflammation was present in Gulf War illness. In 2008, Claw became part of the MAP Research Network, funded by the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, NIDK, at the NIH. The MAP, Multidisciplinary Approach to the Study of Chronic Pelvic Pain, effort, featured diseases that haven't gotten much play on Health Rising, but which bear close ties to fibromyalgia and ME/CFS. Like other nociplastic diseases, these chronic pain conditions show little or no evidence of pathology in the pelvic area. MAP focused on interstitial cystitis and bladder pain syndrome, and chronic prostatitis, chronic pelvic pain syndrome, but also, from time to time, hooked in diseases like irritable bowel syndrome and fibromyalgia. Using various types of brain imaging techniques, MAP researchers found remarkably consistent alterations in the sensory and pain integrating regions of the brain. Alterations in the somatosensory cortex, which integrates sensory signals coming from the body, alterations in connections between the primary somatosensory cortex, presupplementary motor area, hippocampus, memory consolidation, and amygdala, fear center. Altered connections to the default mode network, which causes rumination and increased pain sensitivity. Altered connections between the motor cortex and the posterior insula. Unique microstructural changes in the brain. Increased brain gray matter volume and functional connectivity involving sensory motor and insular cortices in both chronic pain and fibromyalgia patients. Low GABA and choline levels, increased IL-6 levels and TGF-B levels. Note how brain regions, somatosensory cortex, insula, amygdala, motor cortex, default mode network, involved in sensory processing and perception, autonomic nervous system functioning, movement, and sleep, show up again and again. A key player in the brain. Speaking of the insula, Claw described it as one of the most important regions of the brain for fibromyalgia. In the past year or so alone, 7 studies have highlighted the insula in fibromyalgia, and at least 5 studies over the past 5 years have done the same with ME/CFS. Sitting in a prime location, the insula has connections to the somatosensory cortex, sensory signals, thalamus, sensory processing, sleep, movement, alertness, autonomic nervous system, and the amygdala, fear and anxiety. The problems in fibromyalgia, ME/CFS, etc., thankfully, do not appear primarily due to damage per se, but in problems with connectivity. Some brain regions, for example, pain amplifying ones, are too connected or activated, while other regions, inhibitory regions, are not activated enough. The missing long COVID connection. Claw was prescient when, early in the coronavirus pandemic, he warned that chronic pain conditions would likely increase. Studies indicate that 40 to 50% of the ME/CFS-like subset of long COVID patients develop widespread pain, and all of them experience the rest of the nociplastic syndrome, fatigue, sleep, cognitive and mood issues. ME/CFS got tagged early in long COVID because of the post-infectious element and because long COVID looks so much like it. But about half of the people with long COVID also fit the pain-added FM-like phenotype, i.e. they have nociplastic pain. Claw thinks the emphasis on fatigue, which he called one of the most difficult symptoms of all to assess, and the sidelining of fibromyalgia and chronic pain in long COVID has been unfortunate, indeed, and recently made the argument that the long COVID field is missing a potentially valuable connection. It's a shame the fibromyalgia-nociplastic connection in long COVID has been almost totally ignored. The nociplastic element in long COVID provides not only an entree into fibromyalgia, IBS, chronic pelvic pain, migraine, etc., but also to diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, lupus, multiple sclerosis, post-cancer fatigue, etc. It's been a lesson in how oblivious research fields can be. Claw has always been interested in fatigue. His center is called the Chronic Pain and Fatigue Research Center. But pain provides an objective to produce a stimulus, remove it, and see what happens. With the recent adoption of nociplastic pain, three separate validated models of pain exist. None exist for fatigue. Body mapping it. One of Claw's goals has been to show doctors how to tell if their patients have nociplastic pain. It couldn't be simpler. Have the patient fill out a body map of where the pain is. If pain shows up only in, say, the pelvis, you have one set of options: surgery, physical therapy, drugs, etc. If the pain shows up in and outside the pelvis, the patients probably have nociplastic pain and should be treated differently. No need for surgeries to try to fix problems that aren't there, and no need to go the opioid route either. Neither will work in this group of patients. Take endometriosis. Claw has found that in only a small percentage of women with endometriosis is the endometrial tissue causing most of their pain. We've known for decades that the same thing is true for people with low back pain. Some people with spinal issues don't experience much pain, while other people with little discernibly wrong are in a lot of pain. Something else is playing a role in this set of patients, and Claw believes that something is the central nervous system. A small nerve fiber neuropathy rabbit hole? Doctors and patients always look for a physical cause first. Take the small fiber neuropathy findings in fibromyalgia, ME/CFS, and long COVID. These findings excited me because they seem to promise a clear physical cause. That simplicity is so alluring. If your body is in pain, the answer must lie in the body. Fibromyalgia researchers jumped on the small nerve fiber findings, but Claw doesn't think they tell us anything significant about these diseases. He argues that the fact that they have been found in over 200 other conditions makes them about as nonspecific a finding as you can get. He suggested that the disappearance or diminishment of these small neurons is simply the result of the nerves being pruned back to reduce pain. He asked how a reduction in small nerve fibers but no damage could result in more pain. Even if reduced small fiber levels did result in pain, how could they affect the other symptoms in fibromyalgia, the sleep, fatigue, and cognitive issues? Those are all central nervous system symptoms. In 2017, Claw published a paper showing that increasing activation of the insula, an important pain processing area of the brain, resulted in reduced small nerve fiber density in the paws of a rat model. That brought to mind a recent study showing that increased oxidative stress in the brain resulted in reduced energy production in the muscles. In both cases, the brain was able to induce dramatic changes in the tissues of the body. Time will tell how much of a role the brain and central nervous system play in these diseases. Hormones and gender. I didn't expect to be speaking about testosterone with Dr. Claw, but it turns out that he believes the gender bias seen in diseases like fibromyalgia and ME/CFS, more females than males, may reflect a withdrawal of male sex hormones. That's an interesting idea given Dr. Klamis's models suggesting that testosterone is protective in men against ME/CFS, and that some doctors are treating female patients with testosterone. Claw stated that a lot of evidence suggests that sex hormones play a role in these diseases, and that he felt that a research study assessing the effects of testosterone on fibromyalgia is worth doing. Since testosterone can have very negative effects, he emphasized that it should be done in the context of a research study, but conjectured that it might not take that much testosterone to provide help. Studies exploring the effects of hormone-induced gender shifts in transgender individuals may be able to help us understand the role hormones play in chronic pain. treatment. Claw and the Chronic Pain and Fatigue Research Center's investigations into treatment approaches seems to know no bounds. Besides more traditional approaches such as CBT, exercise, and mainstream drugs like Lyrica, Cymbalta, and milnacipran, they've included acupuncture, transcranial magnetic stimulation, and cannabis. Claw has even evinced an interest in psychedelics. Claw's long-standing interest in non-pharmacological approaches to chronic pain and fatigue diseases, including cognitive behavioral therapy and graded exercise therapy, will likely rub some people with ME/CFS the wrong way. While noting the modest results of the PACE trial, 15% showed improvement in ME/CFS symptoms, Claw signed a critique of the new NICE guidelines and supports the use of patient-tailored graded exercise therapy programs. Perhaps because pain is better understood than fatigue, and because more treatment options are present for fibromyalgia, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and GET, graded exercise therapy, never received the notoriety in fibromyalgia that it did in ME/CFS. Fibromyalgia has had its share of behavioral trials, but the field never had to deal with the concerted attempt to psychologically define it that occurred in ME/CFS, when federal funders poured tens of millions of dollars into biopsychosocial clinical trials while ignoring other treatment avenues. This is not to say things are going well on the treatment end in fibromyalgia. The Psychedelic Times in 2021 reported that Claw stated that the current treatment offerings for fibromyalgia are very inadequate and only work in about 1 out of 3 individuals. New therapeutics. When I asked Claw what excites him right now, he called therapeutically fascinating the cannabis and psychedelic studies his lab is engaged in. Since 2014, Claw has co-authored no less than 14 cannabis papers and recently helped pen a guidance for doctors wishing to try cannabis products for chronic pain. He's now testing different components of cannabis, CBD, THC, CBD and THC, in chronic pain. One of his studies found that ingesting high levels of THC may actually increase pain levels, but that lower levels helped. That makes sense, given that THC is binding to the same receptors that opioid drugs are. Take too much of them, and the endogenous opioid or endogenous cannabinoid system, which reduces pain levels, gets turned down. Smaller doses taken intermittently are fine, but higher doses over a longer period may blunt its effects. CBD is more expensive, but doesn't appear to have this problem. He said the main side effect of high CBD use is cost. Claw isn't the only one interested in psychedelics. Jared Younger is beginning a psychedelic trial in fibromyalgia. A different kind of inflammation and a different approach. Claw believes the inflammation in fibromyalgia probably results from neurogenic inflammation, i.e. inflammation produced by agitated nerves, and is trying to understand that and find ways to tamp that down. On the inflammation front, Claw noted that some people have proposed that fibromyalgia is an autoimmune disease. But as someone who's been trained to work with autoimmune diseases, he doesn't believe fibromyalgia is an autoimmune disease, and none of the rheumatologists he works with believe it is either. Some form of chronic low-level inflammation has been proposed for ME/CFS and fibromyalgia for decades, yet we know that standard anti-inflammatories, over-the-counter drugs, prednisone, methotrexate aren't very effective. Time will tell with newer drugs that inhibit specific immune pathways, like the TNFA inhibitor etanercept that Dr. Klimas is trying out in Gulf War illness and ME/CFS, and the JAK inhibitor baricitinib that Eli is trying in long COVID. These drugs are commonly used in autoantibody-driven autoimmune diseases that produce a very vigorous immune response, the kind that can, in some cases, destroy joints. Claw noted, "We're not seeing that kind of tissue destruction or the high levels of systemic inflammation found in diseases like fibromyalgia or ME/CFS, blasting away at the immune system with autoimmune drugs in a person with autoimmune disease and fibromyalgia does not improve their fibromyalgia. With neurogenic inflammation difficult to detect in standard blood draws, nociplastic researchers have found that stimulating whole blood with toxins such as lipopolysaccharide revealed it. Studying the blood straight out of the body doesn't work because the body quickly breaks down the immune factors. Taking the blood out of the body and then stimulating the immune response, on the other hand, allows researchers to assess which part of the immune system is primed to go on the attack. Ion channel dysfunction, interestingly, given the Griffith University work on ion channels in ME/CFS, appears to play a major role, as does the release of histamine from mast cells. Drugs to tamp down neurogenic inflammation response have, and are, being developed. The most notable of these have been the highly successful anti-CGRP drugs developed for migraine, which are also being trialed in fibromyalgia. Low-dose naltrexone may be tamping down neurogenic inflammation in the brain, although Claw isn't sure it's working in the same way that most people think. Claw's studies suggest it's acting as an opioid antagonist and increasing beta-endorphin and reducing enkephalin levels in the brain. Beta-endorphins are natural pain relievers. Enkephalins are activated by the stress response in the presence of pain and amplify the pain-producing circuits in the brain. In other words, he believes LDN, or low-dose naltrexone, is resetting the endogenous opioid system in the brain. My literature search suggests that anti-CGRP drugs, microglial inhibitors, ion channel drugs, low-dose naltrexone, Tonmya, cannabis, mast cell stabilizers, and psychedelics may help tamp down neurogenic inflammation. Tonmya, a new fibromyalgic drug? Tonix's Tonmya, a reformulated cyclobenzapine drug that may help with sleep and pain, will shortly be coming up for review at the FDA. If approved, it will be the first drug in 15 years. It's been a long, dry spell for a disease that got three drugs approved in short order in the late 2000s. Claw said that cyclobenzaprine, Flexeril, a muscle relaxant, was his favorite fibromyalgia drug 25 years ago, and is still his favorite drug. For one, it's one of the rare drugs that improves deep sleep. The problem with Flexeril was that when used as prescribed, 5 to 10 milligrams three times a day, a rapid buildup of toxic factors has prevented it from being used for more than a couple of days. Claw found that fibromyalgia patients were abnormally sensitive to Flexeril. At 10 milligrams, Flexeril was so sedating to fibromyalgia patients that he believes sensitivity to it could be considered almost a biomarker for the disease. Even a milligram, more or less, can make a difference. When he cut down the dose to 5 or even 2.5 milligrams, though, they could tolerate it, use it long-term, and benefit from it. Tonix made a sublingual form of Flexeril called Tonmya, specifically aimed at the fibromyalgia population. Claw thinks it's highly likely that Tonmya will be approved. If approved, it should be readily available from doctors. We should know about Tonmya in the first half of next year. Conclusion. Claw comes at disorders like ME/CFS, fibromyalgia, IBS, long COVID, etc., from the perspective of a long-term chronic pain researcher. He sees them as primarily central nervous system sensory nociplastic disorders driven in part by difficult-to-detect nerve or neurogenic inflammation. Nociplastic disorders that feature chronic pain, fatigue, sleep, cognitive, and mood problems pop up in significant amounts in every disease associated with chronic pain, and simple body maps can reveal them. He believes several themes in ME/CFS and fibromyalgia and long COVID research, such as autoimmunity and small fiber neuropathy, are either incorrect or irrelevant. On the treatment end, opioid drugs, heavy and light-duty anti-inflammatories are generally not helpful. Anti-CGRP drugs, ion channel drugs, low-dose naltrexone, Tonmya, cannabis, mast cell stabilizers, and psychedelics may help tamp down neurogenic inflammation. Getting better sleep is a priority. Mind-body approaches are recommended. Hormonal manipulations could be helpful, but need more study. The neurogenic inflammation field is still relatively new, but researchers are getting closer to the molecular roots of this kind of inflammation. Please support Health Rising and keep the information flowing. You can give a one-time donation at the link in the text version of the article.